Hello, everybody. How are we all doing? Welcome back to another episode of Maternity Live. So much to share, so much to say. I always say that, but it's really true. I first wanted to start off by thanking everybody for sharing all of their tips and tricks, feedback, and advice for how I can sleep better. Honestly, the recommendations were fantastic. Everything from meditations and great apps to use to something that I think is definitely the root cause of a lot of my sleep anxiety, which is I probably need to stay off my phone like 30 minutes to an hour before I go to sleep. And I should most definitely sleep with my phone in another room. And while I think that's absolutely genius and like definitely a contributing factor, like I haven't actually yet mustered up the courage to do that. And I know it's everything from like the light on the screen to just like everything that's all consuming and feeling the need to look at things, read up on things. If I have a thought on my mind, roll over, pull out my phone, just like go deep on it. And I would say that I'm like such a proponent of doing that, that I know that's a huge contributor to probably why I can't turn my brain off at night. And like, I'm going to get there because I know that that's a huge contributor, but I am not there yet. So like, if any of you start doing that and it works for you, let me know. In the meantime, I've downloaded some sleep meditation apps. I have downloaded some spa music, which I'm really enjoying. And Shapiro and I made a playlist of all the songs that have just been, you know, constant reminders of different things throughout our relationship and things, songs that we love, songs from trips, songs from our wedding. And so we've been playing those songs at night, also to play them for the baby too. But all in, I would say like my sleep is still kind of the same, but you know, we're making daily adjustments and improvements based on everyone's feedback daily, and we're adjusting. So this week's episode of Maternity Live is really exciting because it is a podcast swap, and it is my first podcast swap, which is essentially Taylor Strucker, the queen of all things radio, is on this week's episode talking about everything under the sun. And that's what I love about Maternity Live, which is like, that's exactly what I wanted this to be. I wanted it to be about personal and professional, pregnancy, parenthood. And Taylor is someone who just has such deep, you know, inspiring, amazing stories and tidbits, especially on the personal and professional side. And then, of course, you know, I'll hit you with the rest on specifically the pregnancy stuff for sure. But Taylor and I have known each other for a very long time. Her manager, Matt, was one of my closest friends in college. And when he started working for her, he reached out to me and was like, your sister Claudia needs to go on Wake Up with Taylor on Sirius XM. And Taylor and Claudia really hit it off. There were times that like I would show up to the studio at 7 a.m. just to hang out with them because it was so much fun. And Taylor and I have an amazing relationship, but I've never been on her podcast. And since my podcast is on the newer side, she's obviously never been on mine. So after today's episode, if you are not sick of Taylor and I, then you can also head over to Taste of Taylor and listen to more Taylor and Olivia talk about everything under the sun. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode and just dive deep on all things personal, professional, pregnancy, you name it. So big topic number one is something that I want to address because this was a very important week. Well, this week is a very important week in my family because so many people have birthdays and there's so many celebrations. And Tuesday was my dad's birthday. And, you know, I think a lot about grief, especially during a time of like so much excitement and so much new and so much celebration. And I think a lot of people have reached out to me and asked me to talk about like my own personal grief or how I deal with grief, especially dealing with pregnancy. And so, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on grieving. Like, I think that grieving is something you do for your entire life. I think that, you know, obviously closer to when something happens, you know, the kind of constant push and pull of like how your grief affects you is like more daily. But I think the person that you become over time because of the grief that you've experienced is just, it's like so core. It becomes so much of who you are. Like, I think for me, and I say this openly and honestly, like, I know that I am the person that I am today because of the grief that I have experienced, because of losing my dad when I was in high school, honestly really changed the course of my entire life. It really was a huge reason for where I went to college. Because of where I went to college, that's how I ended up in my job. How I ended up my job is how I stayed in the city that I stayed in. City that I stayed in is how I had the relationships I had to get to, you know, meeting Zach and getting married and now having a child. And I just, like, from that one moment of grief and sadness that really, like, not only helped me to evaluate who I am as a person and just know that, like, I'm living my life with someone that I love and care about so much watching over me, but it then also impacted the steps that I took in my life. And now here I am almost 12 years later. And, like, I still grieve. And I think, like, birthdays and celebrations and days like that, you know, really just kind of, like, remind you of the things that are lost. Even around my wedding, you know, it's just, like, moments in time where you want people that you love, people that, you know, raised you, that, you know, grew up with you, whether you've lost a family member or a friend or a grandparent or whatever it is, to just, like, be there for those significant moments in your life. And obviously, I'm going through a significant moment in my life, which is very difficult without my dad. And there have been other moments in my life that have been significant without him too. And so when I think back on his birthday, I just, you know, it's hard. I think grief is hard. I think, you know, being honest and open about your emotions is hard. And I think it's okay to really, like, take some time sometimes to just deal with that and feel sad about it or think about it and look at old videos and old photos and tell stories. And, you know, that's definitely something that I do. You know, I'm always, like, looking through my phone for old memories and old photos, even for just sending them to anybody. Like, remember this? Like, this was so much fun. I kind of have become somebody that really values, like, every single day, just because you never know what's going to happen. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about that, obviously, on the podcast, just given the fact that, you know, I had a moment this week where I was, like, thinking really deeply about my dad, and just, you know, that's emotional for me. And so I promised you guys that I would always be honest, be open, be emotional. And on the flip side of it, then I also think of the positives, right? Like, I haven't had grandparents for well over a decade, but Zach still has two of his grandparents, and they're going to be great grandparents. And that to me is something so exciting and so wonderful. And I feel so blessed that, like, we have them in our lives. And, like, they've really, like, they're like my grandparents too. And I just absolutely adore them. And I think, you know, the one thing from grieving that you really learn is just to, or at least that I've really learned, is just to think about things in a new way that just help you to move forward and help you to live your life and help you to, you know, put all your pieces together and live a whole, complete, and meaningful life. So dealing with grief, especially during a life change, is hard, no matter how long you've been grieving for. And that is big topic number one. Big topic number two, I just want to lighten things up, because obviously, you know, my first topic was a little bit on the more emotional side, but I recently saw this study, and I just want to read it to you exactly as it is written, because I'm not making anything up, but here it is. Headline says, "Mothers-to-be who use makeup are more likely to have fat children because the chemicals in lipstick and foundation can reach them in the womb," study claims. Okay, I mean, I don't even know where to begin with this, but they're basically saying that women who use lipstick and foundation are likely to have fat children because it has something in it called butylparaben, which I think everybody knows, like, parabens are bad. And, you know, we see a lot of, like, products coming out on the market that are sulfate-free and paraben-free and whatnot. But parabens are able to seep in the body through the skin and then cross over into the placenta, with the risk of harming the baby, the scientists in Germany warned. I'm not a medical professional by any means. I think it's wonderful that they do studies like this. And I know that, like, in this particular case, the sample, they were testing the urine samples of 629 mothers. And I just, like, I have a general PSA as it relates to the choices that pregnant women make. And I'm just going to say it, like, very loud and crystal clear, which is, leave pregnant women alone. Okay. I think if this is like one study coming out of Germany, you know, in an article, this is here in the Daily Mail. There's certain things we know. Don't drink alcohol, don't do drugs, don't smoke tobacco. But the reality is like, you know, I was talking about on an episode a few weeks back about how I was hoping to eat a hot dog soon. And then I saw in the maternity livers group that people were saying that they do eat hot dogs. Again, like, make the choices that you want to make, whatever you think is best for you, whatever recommendations you take from your doctor. But I can guarantee you, my doctor has not told me to not wear foundation or lipstick. And I think if you want to use clean products, you want to use organic products, go for it. Amazing. But that is the general PSA that I'm here to say today. Leave pregnant women alone. Let them make the decisions they want to make. Let them take advice from their medical professionals and do with it as they please. The end. It's going to be a short topic too, because that's all I have to say. This literal headline triggered me in the sense that I was just like, oh my God. You know, it's like you can't drink coffee and you can't, you know, have this sort of fish or this sort of sushi or this, you know, deli turkey only warmed up, and don't eat that and don't eat this kind of cheese. And it's like, but you know, these things are not standardized. The things that we know not to do as pregnant women, we obviously don't do. The rest of it that is subjective, make whatever fucking choices you want. And that is all that I have to say. I'm moving on to topic number three. I'm not even dwelling on this another second. Topic number three is like a pregnancy myth buster, or like maybe myth buster. Like, I don't know if I'm busting any myths. I just like, I keep hearing people say that like, you glow during pregnancy. You're glowing, you're glowing, you're glowing. And I'm like, it's so nice of you to say that, but I literally could not feel any opposite. And I feel like I personally am like always like so verklempt. Like everything is so puffy, growing, like especially on my face. And you know, I've talked about the positives. I've talked about the hair growth and the nail growth and all of that that comes from taking the prenatals, but I almost feel like it's not what we, like it's a way to make us feel better about like how we're not feeling like we're glowing. Like I can promise you, I have never once felt like I'm glowing. And like, sure, whenever people tell me that, whenever they say that to me, I'm like, that is so lovely of you. I've been feeling horrible, so thank you. But, you know, there's like so many other things that like, I feel like with my skin is like so bizarre some of the times. Like it's sometimes like gets like red and patchy. Like I sometimes get acne, almost like a menstrual cycle, and I just don't feel the glow. I think like maybe like people look at you and like, because you have this like spirit and excitement and whatnot about you, like it is a glow, but like, I just don't genuinely think like anytime I look in the mirror that I'm glowing by any means. And I just think I'm more so like sweating, or just, you know, sums up. It's not a glow. I don't want to like, I mean, some people definitely do glow and like amazing. That's so great for them. And that's why I was like, this is maybe or maybe not a myth buster, but like this bitch over here is not glowing by any means. So for anybody who's ever said that to me, thank you. I just don't feel that way. And I just, especially in my third trimester, like I just feel like I'm noticing so many changes, like especially on my face. You guys know I've been like a huge proponent of like never having a skincare routine, which like probably needs to change on the sooner side. But like my skin has just been like all sorts of weird. And then I got like, you know, all these marks and stretch marks all over my body, arms, stomach, legs, you name it. And the acne. And then, like, I have hair growth everywhere and weird. Like, there's no glow. You know? I just, like, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer about it. But, like, oh, my God, I just can't. There is no glow. Anyways, it's time for the podcast swap part of this amazing episode of Maternity Live, if I may say so myself. And I have the one and only Taylor Strucker, the queen of radio, joining me to talk about just everything. Just, she's such a like fun person to talk to. She obviously like knows her shit and has been through so many life experiences and has been so open and shared them with so many people. And I have so much respect for that, because I feel like especially when you do radio, it's so hard to go live every day, not censor yourself, share so much of your life with yourself, and then like, you know, deal with any of the ramifications that come from that. And like, she's been doing that for well over a decade. And so why would I just waste any more time but then to share with you my interview with the one and only Taylor Strecker.
Taylor Strecker, welcome to Maternity Live. I mean, it's honestly such an honor to have you on my podcast because you are like the queen of, you're the queen of radio. You're the queen of voice, you know?
Girl, thank you. Hey, girl, hey.
But you're also, you know, you're so much more than a voice, you know? Oh,
thank you so much. You know what's so funny is that people say this a lot to me, right? Like when I first met your sister, Claudia, and then I met like all of you guys, like there was this like, wow, like you're the queen of radio, right? Because I think being a serious, like Howard's such a massive force in audio and radio that like anyone that works there automatically like is cool from the outside looking in. But when you work at Sirius, they do a really good job of making you feel like you're nobody and you're really lucky to be working there. So like, thanks to them for keeping me humble.
Totally.
But then also like, I remember even like, so when I got fired from Sirius, and then I wound up working with Dear Media. I remember I went to a meeting with them and they were like, oh my God, we have a, like, you're a pro. Like, you're the queen of radio. And I'm like, I thank you for this title. But like, I promise you, Olivia, in no way, shape or form do I feel like the king of or queen of shit. Like,
okay.
I want to actually,
that is a perfect place to jump right in because yes, like maybe you don't feel that way, but obviously people feel that way about you. And I think it's a combination of so many things. It's a combination of you having been at Sirius, but it's also like you are a leading female voice from a radio perspective. And I feel like how the hell did you even find your voice to even get into an environment like Sirius and really like take your voice and your confidence and turn it into a successful career?
So thank you for that, first of all. I think in this business of entertainment, I think you need to be in the right time at the right place, but you also have to be good at like identifying opportunity. But I think luck has a lot to do with this business. And that involves like this idea of right time, right place. So I had just graduated from college. So to go way back, I performed like my whole life. Like I used to sing and I did like musical theater, and being in front of a camera was like, or a microphone was something that like I really had high aspirations to do. But then I spent a summer in San Francisco with my uncle, who at the time had this business called Bobino Casting. It was like a really big extra casting company in San Francisco that my uncle had worked for and then like acquired from the owner who had passed away from HIV. So my uncle got the business and then he kind of grew it to this like big thing in San Francisco. And then he ended up moving to LA and I was actually working with him this summer that he invented the software. But basically my uncle, which is crazy because he's just like Uncle Bo to me, but like he is like a massive name in casting, and he created something called LA Casting, which basically put all casting like online. So he basically like invented the software. And he sold the company like 4-ish years ago. And I know he's a big deal in casting because Stassi Schroeder's fiance, Bo Clark, is in casting. And when I told him that I had an Uncle Bo and he was in casting, he was like, wait, your Uncle Bo is Bo Bino? And I was like, oh, that's a big deal. And he was like, he's like, yes, he's basically, what did he say? He said he was kind of like the, I'm going to blank on his name right now. And I sound so stupid. Bill Gates. He's like Bill Gates of casting, if you will.
Oh my goodness.
So I worked with my Uncle Bo and
you were a child star.
No. I was 17 living with my uncle because my parents hated my boyfriend. So they moved me out to San Francisco to live with my uncle to get me away from my boyfriend. And so I learned the business through his side of the business. So amazing. He knew I wanted to act and stuff. And he said to me, Taylor, you don't want to do that. He's like, I see guys in suits on their like lunch breaks doing auditions. It's like, he's like, it's depressing. You want to be on the business side of this industry. So I kind of let go of my dreams of being like, I don't know, a star.
Because oh, please.
But my uncle was basically kind of like, wouldn't you rather be the one making decisions than the one being decided about? And I was right. Like, yeah, kind of. So when I went to Ithaca College after that, I was like full blown production. Like I was like, I want to be like a producer or like a documentarian. Not that they make any fucking money, but like I was really on like the business side and track of everything. So when I graduated from Ithaca, I got a job in advertising. And so I had completely given up on the dream of like being talent. So I was working at an ad firm, and Nicole, if you listen to Sirius, you probably know her. She's Mashup Nicole. Hits One is like one of the biggest like pop stations, I mean, in the country for sure. So she was my best friend from college and roommate in New York City. And so at the time, she was the receptionist at Sirius. Wow. So I would go over there and hang out with her, and like she was working the front desk and I'm like working this like ad job, like, you know, on the production side. And I fucking hated the job. And I was like, I was only there for like 4 to 6 months, but I realized pretty quickly that like I didn't want to be the one booking the talent. I wanted to be the talent. So I'm like, how do I get back into that? And it just so happened to be that Nicole and I were at a party with Sirius people, and they were like super low down looking to cast talent for Cosmo Magazine Radio. And so they saw me and Nicole like interacting, and the programming director overheard my voice and she was like, I'm going to get that girl to audition. So like literally that's how I got my first break in radio. And Crazy. It was, yeah, I mean, like literally a combination of like, who, you know, I knew Nicole, she was a receptionist, which got me into the party. And then just like random good timing that Cosmo Magazine wanted to launch a radio station, and then they needed like a young girl with a cool voice. And the programming director happened to like oversee me like holding court with people at a party, and was like, that girl could do the job potentially. So then I just started auditioning, and actually Nicole and I were supposed to do it together. I ended up getting it and Nicole didn't, which was really hard for our friendship and also being roommates, but we got through it. And then she ended up way better off, quite frankly, getting the morning mashup show, because she's like still at Sirius, didn't get fired, and is making fucking loot. So she is like totally fine. Nobody has to cry for her. But that's how I got my job. Like, you know what I mean? Like I was basically fucked up at a bar talking to a bunch of people, and somebody was like, that's my girl.
No, literally, I was just going to say, so the moral of the story is like, show up to the fucking party.
Yes.
Throw on a pair of heels and get your ass out the door, because you never fucking know what's going to happen.
True story. And all, like, I know, it's crazy. And I mean, listen, after like that introduction, of course, like I had to do like a bunch of written auditions and like, you know, actual like vocal auditions. So it was a very arduous audition process. But I do think that also like my background in performance and also my background in production allowed me to kind of like have like the skill set to be ready for that kind of opportunity. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Well, also when you were saying that you worked in an ad firm, like I'm not surprised by that either, because I think having that like advertising marketing lens on top of the performance, on top of the production, because your personality is your brand.
Yes.
And like, do you think a lot about like how you cultivate your brand, or is it, I mean, there's so much about you that's just like natural, right? Like you are naturally you 100% of the time in every aspect of your life, which I do want to get into also, just in terms of like how you, you know, perform on a platform like radio 24/7, and you don't censor yourself. You are honest about who you are, what you've been through, what you think about things. But then how does that relate to like how you really like market and brand yourself?
Well, when I first got the job in radio, I was working, like I said, with Cosmo Magazine, which to be honest, was not really my brand. So when we were launching, they said to me, you can either have the morning show or the night show, because the afternoon slot was already taken by this guy. If you watch Vanderpump Rules, his name is Patrick. He dated Stassi, and that was a disaster. But I met Patrick like way back in the day, like predating Stassi, and he was like, he's super talented at radio. So
did you set them up?
No.
Oh, interesting.
He's the reason I know Stassi, because him and Got I were really good friends. They started to date. And then when she moved to New York and quit the show, that like 2 year span that she did that, her and I became like best friends. So thank you to Patrick for the introduction. And actually Stassi will say that like Patrick and I are the reason that she got into podcasting, but it's even more Patrick than me, because he really is very talented radio broadcaster. He's like a master. And I say that because he taught me how to find my brand. So he already like had his time slot, and they said to me, do you want to do the night show or the morning show? And I said, definitely the night show. I'm like, I go to like One Oak all the time. So like I'll do my radio show and then I'll go out to One Oak after. And then I get to sleep in late. And they were like, great. When you do the night show though, you have to talk about sex explicitly. And I was like, I'll take the morning show because I was raised like super Catholic and super like sex is bad. And I knew my mom would be like pissed off at me if all I was doing was talking about sex. So I took the fucking bullshit morning time slot just so I could avoid the wrath of my mother.
That's
so
hilarious.
But you know, it's still Cosmos. So they still want you to talk about sex and like how to give a blowjob, even in the mornings. I mean, it was a little bit more PG because it was like in the morning and kids were in the car. But I actually really started off just like trying to be their brand. And I have to go back to my audition. So the reason why Nicole didn't get the job and I did was because they said Nicole was too hypersexual in the audition, which I thought was crazy because I thought if anyone was going to get cut between the two of us, it would be me for like not being sexy and like sexualized enough.
Right.
So I have to say that I do actually, from working like with Cosmo really closely with higher ups, they actually saw their brand very differently than like the rest of the world saw their brand. Like, do you remember when they put the word orgasm by Mandy Moore's head on the cover and she like made this big stink about it? It was like 10 years ago. And it's so funny because like they kind of, they didn't, I mean, I know that Helen Gurley Brown, like she was like, you know, she put Cosmo on the map. She like wanted it to be like a Bible for sex for women. But when Kate White came in, and I love Kate White, she was a great editor in chief, but Kate was like a little bit of a prude, like on the down low. And so was I. So I think that that's like why I got the job. But I felt like for so long that I had to be like the girl that had sex, like Carrie Bradshaw. So for a really long time, I actually was not being myself. And I was being something that I thought Cosmo wanted me to be, or like what I needed to be. And I remember Patrick said to me at one point, you're so awesome. Like when we're like having drinks or like having dinner or like even in the office, but when you're on the air, like you kind of like put on this like fake facade and like, why don't you just be you? And I was like, be me. And I was like, well, if I'm me, what will my mom think? Or if I'm me, will it not be good enough for Cosmo? And so Patrick really encouraged me just to be me. And then what happened was, I went through like tons of co-hosts in the beginning. Maybe I'm a difficult bitch or maybe other people are just assholes. I don't know. But I finally got this girl and she actually had worked on the night show and she came in just to be my news girl. And somehow she like wiggled her way into a co-host position and she was very difficult. And like every time like I'd be like out for a day or like took vacation, she'd always like try to tell my bosses that the show is better without me, even though the show is called Wake Up with Taylor. So she was like, and she was very, like, she was a know-it-all. Like, she knew everything about pop culture, politics. Like, you name the subject matter, like, on Jeopardy, she always got the answer right. And it got to the point where, like, every time I was on radio with her, she was trying to, like, make me look bad because she was coming for my job. And so she would be like, nope, that's wrong. Nope, that's wrong. Who, what, how'd you say the name? And I'm like, this is, like, not even fun anymore because now basically I'm on like a 4-hour long game of Jeopardy every single day and like this sucks dick. So I was like, what can I do to get the power back from her? Cause like, she's like running roughshod over me. And this is like, it's not fun for the audience. It's not fun for me. And like management's not stepping in. So what can I do to take the reins back? Cause it is ultimately my show and she ultimately does work on my show. And I thought, I know what she doesn't know. She doesn't know shit about me. She can't tell me that a story I say about my life is true or untrue. She can have opinions about me as a person. So I just started to literally turn the show into like the me show just to get control back. And that's when I found the brand.
But also that's what people resonated with. Like, that's what people love about you is your stories. Like, I remember in the early days when Claudia first started going on with Wake Up with Taylor and I came to the studio one morning to just like surprise and hang out with you guys. And you were telling us like some story of just like you being on the subway, but it was just like the laughter and just like the ambiance in the room, like everything was just uplifted because like people just found like what you were doing on a regular basis to be so interesting. And I think like, you know, for a lot of people in general who don't live in New York, like wanting to hear what it's like to kind of like live and work in New York City. Like I can imagine that, you know, from the outset, it might not think like people would be interested in hearing about like your daily musings, but I'm not surprised that like that's how you really found your brand because especially in like the social media world that we live in, like that's what people right. are interested in, like the little nuances of like your daily life.
But like this all happened. I mean, Instagram wasn't even a thing when I started doing radio, and Facebook, like I was kind of on it, but like not really. So social media had not even, I mean, it was barely even invented when I started doing this. So I would say that like, I definitely recognize, well, at first I just talked about myself to get control over the show, but then I started to see that it was really resonating with people.
Yeah.
And either it was very relatable content to people. People were like, oh my God, you say the things that like I'm going through or I'm thinking, or people would say like, oh my gosh, it's so aspirational. And I was such a big fan of Sex and the City. And I was like, oh, so I get to kind of be like a watered down, like preppier, lamer version of Sex and the City, but I'll take it. And then also I was so obsessed with Housewives on Bravo. And this is also like when Housewives was just like, just kind of sort of becoming a thing. Cause this, don't forget, this was like over a decade ago.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, I love reality television. So if I do kind of my own version of reality radio, maybe that will work for people too. So that's kind of how like I found the brand. I stumbled into it. And it was like less about intentionally, like, this is my approach to branding myself, and more of just like, fuck, I think that this will fix a couple of problems. And then I kind of like stumbled into it.
Well, it sounds kind of like you stumbled into a lot of different things on your course, right? Where it's like, uh-huh. One, you stumbled into radio and you stumbled into your brand. And I want to talk about something that like, I want to hear if you feel like you stumbled into it or not, but yeah. I think one of the most interesting things about you, other than everything, is just how open and honest you've been about your love journey, yes. right? And just really, like, when I hear you talk about not only your Taylor, but also just, like, you are so strong in your emotions and your beliefs, and, like, I think how you emerge from a professional standpoint is really in line with like how I view you from a relationship standpoint of just like really finding yourself and then like being so true to that. So for, you know, my listeners who might not know, you were married.
Yes.
To a man. You got yes. divorced, and then you fell in love with your best friend, a yes. woman, Taylor yep. also.
Yep. Yes.
And I just want to take it back a little bit because I'm sure this is not something you want to relive, but like getting divorced is, I'm sure, an extremely difficult period of time. When did you know that you like had to make that decision? Was that something you stumbled into, or were you like, there was a moment of time when you were like, I'm done?
No, that wasn't a stumble. Like that was me just like having like bricks falling on me for 5 years straight. So yeah. I shouldn't have walked down the aisle. I knew that we weren't going to make it. But at that point I had been, I call him Wusband. I met Wusband.
I love that.
Like when I was 25 in the Hamptons, we dated for a year and a half. Then we got engaged, which I think is actually pretty quick, right?
Normal. Zach and I got engaged after a year and a half, but
so
it depends okay, on the relationship.
And you know what? My sister actually and her husband too got engaged after a year and a half. So I guess that's not so crazy, but our dating life was great. You know, like we were traveling and like I said, going to Roanoke and living the best life ever. And actually, everything was really good when we dated. So a year and a half of really good dating. And then the second we got engaged, it was like, oh shit, man, it's getting real. And it was like, I started fighting with the family. And listen, it takes two to tango. I'm very strong-willed. And if you try to push me around, you will get the opposite reaction from me.
Right.
And so that's like when, I think once we were engaged, that's when his family was like, okay, so this is our family and this is how it works. And listen, I get it. There's very strong family dynamics in every family. And when someone comes in and threatens to disrupt like the status quo, it can cause problems. But sometimes the status quo is fucked up and it needs to be shaken up a little bit. And so sometimes it could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing. So I was coming in like, I'm not going to follow these rules that you guys made up in your family because that's not how shit works in my family. Do you know what I mean? And right. I'm going to be part of this family, and you can't tell me what bridesmaids dresses to pick. And you can't tell me where I have to have my wedding and all these like little, and when you really look at them, they're like little tiny small things, but like every single day being met with stuff like that, I started to realize like, oh, shit's really not good. And, you know, that's when the fighting between my then fiance and I started. Cause like, I was like, you need to put your foot down about this, or, you know, how are we going to raise our kids? I mean, everything yeah, that could come up, everything that could come up in a relationship came up during the engagement. And there was a lot of fighting and a lot of crying and a lot of walks on my part on the phone with my family being like, I don't know how to fix this. And my parents were like, we're really, really worried. So we actually started going to therapy while planning a wedding because my parents were like, you know, it's common practice that in some religions that people see get counseling before they get married. And you guys really fucking need it because this is like really, really bad. Like we're getting to be at a point where nobody in the families are talking on the wedding day. And that's like not what it should be about.
Yeah.
So we started going to therapy and I remember calling my, my wedding planner and saying to her like, okay, so I need to postpone the wedding. And she was like, no, she's like, you either can cancel it, that which you can do, or you should just have it because postponing is all the negative, like financial repercussions of canceling. But then you're going to just continue doing it. So either like, don't get married or just go through with it. And I did not have the balls. I was like 27. I had been talking about my relationship on the radio. I've been talking about the wedding planning on the radio. We had a segment called Almost Hitch Bitch. And like, I felt like so many people were invested in it and I just didn't have the courage to call it off. I mean, calling off a wedding is really fucking scary.
Yeah.
Weirdly, it seems scarier than the idea of getting divorced down the road. You know what I mean? Which
I kind of do actually, because I just feel like the whole production around it and just, I don't know, it's like more so, you know, at least if you get divorced, you gave it a try, I guess.
Well, that's how I felt. And I loved him and like I had committed my life to him. And I knew if I postponed or canceled the wedding, he would be mortified and would never forgive me. So like if I canceled the wedding, that meant we were going to have to break up and I wasn't ready to break up, you know? Right. So we went through with the wedding and I just, you know.
Was the first year of marriage, like, did you have any sort of honeymoon phase ever?
No. God. I mean, from the second we got engaged to the second we got divorced, honestly, it was like all the, just the same shit, just a different day. So we had therapy before the wedding. We had therapy right after the wedding. He would like come in and out of it. It was like couples therapy, but then like me, you like one-on-one. And I'd say after like 2 or 3 years, I'm like, yeah, this is probably not going to work out. And then I would say that I probably spent a year and a half, like in the relationship, like getting myself like the courage to get the divorce. So like,
yeah,
I remember, you know, we had a prenup, which had like alimony and shit like that in there. And like, I mean, these aren't like sexy things to talk about, but they're real things. And I had to sit down and be like, can I even afford a divorce? Like,
right.
Do I have to move home with my parents? They live in Boston. My job's in New York City. Like, what am I going to do? And so I had to like think long and hard about that. And then like, I remember I started to look at like real estate, like apartments that I could move into. And I had like a huge stack of them in like our guest bedroom because we lived in this like mansion apartment in Tribeca. And one day he came into the bedroom and was like, what are these? And I said, they're apartments. And he said, why? And I said, because I'm going to leave you. I was honest about it. But I really do think that he thought I was full of shit and that I was never going to leave and that I like he was calling my bluff. And it just got to a point where it was like, enough's enough. I can't take this anymore. There was like it wasn't like one straw that broke the camel's back. It was like a bunch of little broken straws that finally just accumulated to being like, fuck it. I truly can't. I mean, my family was encouraging me to get a divorce. My friends were like begging me to get a divorce for my own sanity, you know?
Right.
And I mean, I could probably pinpoint a handful of things that I was like, okay, this is something that's like very concerning, but I won't go into that. Out of respect for, you know, my ex. And
can I ask you a question that is a little personal, but like, did you guys ever talk about having kids? And was that something that like scared you that you were like, I don't like just dealing with his family on the wedding side. I can imagine like maybe you thought like dealing with his family and being their grandkids, there's just no way this can work.
I took plan B like in an inappropriate way. Do you know what I'm saying? Like we didn't have sex a lot, but when we did, it was always in the middle of the night and we never used protection. And I swear to God, like I would go home to visit my parents. I was like, we have to go to CVS, get plan B. And they were like, oh my God, again. But like, I was terrified of having kids with him because that's when I knew I was going to have I was going to lose all control. Do you know what I mean? Like
totally.
They were going to be completely in charge. And like, now we have kids together and like I mean, the idea of having children with, like, under those circumstances and with him was terrifying to me. So luckily I never had to worry because I didn't get pregnant in that relationship. But yeah, I was very well aware that once we had kids, like, that was it for me. And there was going to be no other options than to, like, stick it out and be in the family and kind of just, like, acquiesce.
Right.
You know, and it would have killed me. It would have been it would have killed my soul. So
what is your biggest piece of advice to people who are, like, so unhappy in their relationships and contemplating a divorce? I think sometimes people think it's, like, to your point, even when you were doing the financials, like, is it easier to stay? And yeah, how risky it is to just really, like, go at it alone again.
So here's my advice. So I had a lot of my friends at the time, and I know that they thought they were giving me good advice, but they would say to me things like, just have a baby. It'll fix it. That is, like, the number one thing. I mean, babies are such a blessing. And I mean, Olivia, you know, like, you're like, when you want a baby, it's, like, the greatest thing in the world. But, like, I promise you, if you are in a bad spot in your relationship, like, I'm talking real bad, you're thinking divorce, babies are not band-aids for relationships that are on their way to divorce, you know? Like, so that's my number one piece of advice, is don't get pregnant. Because I remember a friend said to me, like, if you get pregnant now, you'll have the first grandchild. And if you have the first grandchild, then you're going to be in a really good spot with the parents. And I was like, I don't think that's how it works in this family.
Like, did you ever have a sit down with them? Like, what the fuck is the problem?
Oh my God, Olivia.
I have to ask,
oh,
you know?
All we did was have family meetings.
Oh my God, stop.
It was like, and he also, don't forget, like, aside from his parents, he had siblings. So, like, and they had, and their significant others. I mean, we had, like,
it was just like a gang up on Taylor.
Oh my God, girl. It was like, okay, so then on Tuesday we have this couple coming over, but then we're going to see your parents on Saturday to talk about Tuesday's meeting. And then we're supposed to have drinks with this sister and her boyfriend. But now that we're fighting with this sister, now she's not talking to us, even though nothing happened between us. So the boyfriend's going to come over to explain why she isn't coming over. Okay. Okay. I mean, it was like non-fucking stop. It was crazy.
That's crazy. Okay. I just had to ask. I mean, I assumed the answer was yes, but I figured, like it seems like, you know, even though you had apprehensions from the beginning, like, you went into it with the best of intentions and did everything you could, but, like, you can't change people who do not want to be changed. So
No. That's another lesson. Like, I really do have to say, okay, so there's a couple of things. If you don't get along with your significant other's family, like, run. But here's the thing, is that if you can actually put physical distance, like, you know, like move to a different state between you and your significant other's family, and you only have to see them, like, a handful of times a year, I think that's fine. I think that's totally fine. But if it's a scenario where, like, you have to see the family, like, family is, like, in close proximity and you see them all the time. Like, for example, I am really close to my girlfriend Taylor's family. Like, I adore them. And it's a damn good thing I do, because we see them before the quarantine, we saw them at least 2 weekends out of the month. And it was great. It's great because it's fun. It's like they are our closest friends, you know?
Yeah.
But I've realized that, like, you know, really family, you spend a lot of time with family, especially once people in the family start having kids, you spend more and more time with the family. So just take that in consideration, because if you think that you're, like, having kids is going to, like, create your own nuclear family away from the family, you probably got another thing coming. It's not really easy to break those habits. I actually remember I said to my ex-husband, like, he had a business in Texas. And I was like, why don't we just move to Texas? Like, I think I can do my job through Sirius in Texas. Sure, I'll have to wake up at fucking 3 a.m. to do the job, but, like, whatever. Yeah. I really thought, like, if we moved to Dallas, we could, like, kind of have our own new life, and that would be enough. But he just did not want to move away from his family.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think that had we moved to Texas, okay, we probably would still be married. But now, in hindsight, being with Tay, I would have been in, like, you know, that's the thing too, though. You know, if you're madly in love with somebody, maybe the shit with the family and stuff, you'd let slide off your back, because it's like, whatever, I love this person so much that, like, I can, like, take this on because it doesn't matter. I remember saying to him, because of the way things are with your family, you need to be, like, all, like, near perfect, and you're not. Like, we don't love each other enough to make this worth our while.
Yeah, I understand.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, if we were, like, stupid madly in love, then maybe we would have been able to survive it. So maybe it actually has a lot to do with that and less with everything else.
Interesting.
I try to think about stuff with Tay, like if I was being treated like with his family, like by Tay's family, would I fight to stay with her? I think the answer would be yes, actually.
Yeah. But so, I think that's also what you love about her so much is that her family's so great and you love being with them. Like it's all kind of rolls up together.
Yeah, exactly.
Because like you start to see a side of somebody, I would assume, like just knowing the environment that they grew up in when that starts to rear its ugly head. Yeah. And then you're like, okay, like you are a product of this. Right. No wonder.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then there's also this thing too, where I was like really scared about raising kids. Like, so I'm like, I'm in this system that I view as flawed, right? Like, I don't think it works. Like there's double standards all over the place. And like, basically I felt like, I'm just like a truth seeker, like in my own life and in general. And I just like, I believe that people are, you know, they can be good, they can be bad, but like everybody's flawed. And that's like totally fine. You just have to be self-aware and honest about when you fuck up, say you're sorry when you're wrong, let's make up. Like, I just want like genuine, honest peace and harmony, but like from an honest standpoint, you know, like everybody has to have like, get like all their shit off their chest and feel like there's actual resolution to things. And so that's what I was trying to do in that family. And that just was not the way that they operated. So, you know, because my intentions really were good. Like I was like, if we can just all start talking openly and honestly and really taking responsibility for our actions and genuinely apologizing for things, instead of sending emails that say, I'm sorry that you misinterpreted my email when you hurt someone's feelings.
Oh, stop.
It's like, yeah, but it's like, can we just get to a place where like, let's talk real. Like, you don't like me. Why don't you like me? What have I done to you? What can I apologize for? You know, like that's what I was trying to get the conversation to. And I tried really hard with many different people in the family. And I think I probably, once I, there was one conversation I'll never forget. And it's when I realized this is never going to change.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, I have to give up because like, this is just, it's generational. It's beyond me, you know? And like,
yeah,
it is what it is. And so I just remember feeling like, I can't in good consciousness bring children into a system that I can't live by. Like it will just destroy me. So that was when I kind of realized I had to get out of it. And like, listen, to each his own, like some people, like they deal better by not dealing with the truth. I think actually a lot of people are like that. I just happen to be somebody that I'm brutally self-aware and I expect brutal honesty and self-awareness from those around me. And if I can't get that, then I will lose my mind.
Yeah. You know? And that's also probably how you were raised too, is like just being in an environment, like I'm sure your family. No,
really? No.
Oh, really?
Maybe that's why I am so like,
oh, interesting. Yeah.
You know, I mean, my family's wide open now because when your daughter comes out of the closet at the age of 30 something, you have to publicly on her radio show that's nationwide, you have to face reality. But my dad was a doctor in town. And so I remember my mom would always be like, your dad's a doctor in town. You have to be good. It's, you know, like if you're bad, it's a bad reflection on us as a family. So I definitely had a lot of pressure to like be good, be perfect. And I think that was a pressure my mom put on herself and her mom put on her. Again, right. Another generational thing. And I abided by that. I mean, look, even when I got my job with Cosmo Radio, I was like, well, I'll take the morning show because I don't want to upset my mom.
Right.
So there was a lot of that. But I will say that my job in radio, my mom and I fought for the first year and a half of my job. I'm not joking. Every single day. She would call me and say, you're embarrassing the family. You're embarrassing me. I can't believe the things you're talking about. And I got to a point where I said, Mom, like, I love you so much, but like my career is not your fucking report card. Like,
right.
I have to, like, first of all, you didn't have to listen. Number one.
Totally.
Number two, this radio show isn't for you and your fucking friends. And if your friends are listening and then coming back to you and being like, oh, Taylor was talking about this. Oh, Taylor goes out and she drinks a lot.
They're not your friends.
I'm like, they're shitty fucking friends. Yeah. I'm like, they're weird fangirls who are like psychotically listening to 4 hours of me talk and then running back to you like they just listened on a private phone call. I know everyone's listening. It's my job. So basically she just had to start getting really good about, you know, not caring what people thought.
Yeah.
And so that's when it actually started to change. Like our family dynamic. And so maybe that's why I fought so hard with husband and his family, because I had to fight so hard in my own family. I'm like, well, I'm not going to, if I just had to fight my mom for a year and a half to do my job, I'm not now going to have to go back into this like world of like, let's be perfect and let's play pretend, because I had just fought so hard to get to a real place in my family.
Totally.
And then girl, when I came out, oh my God. Oh my God.
Can we before that, like what was your post divorce dating life like? Like, did you just hit the town hard? Were you just ready to go? Did you give yourself time? Like what? Because it feels like you were, you know, in your head, you know, kind of one foot out the door for a while. So by the time you got both feet out the door.
Okay. What
was the Taylor agenda?
So I actually thought that I had friends of mine who were encouraging me to get this divorce. And I remember I was like scared. Like, I'm like, I'm going to be alone. I'm going to be poor. Like, what am I going to do? And they were like, oh my God, we have this guy set up for you. He is like so cute. And he's like, you know, very responsible. He'll buy you all the Chanel bags. And like, he's a good guy that's like ready to get into a real relationship. And like, they basically were like, we've shown him pictures of you. And he's like, listened to you on the radio and he's interested. So I literally was like, oh, I already have a boyfriend.
Oh my God, I'm dying. I'm dead.
But that was the thing that I needed to be like, you're not going to end up like alone living in a shoebox in New York City. Like,
right.
Because I really, you know, I kind of was raised in a traditional family of like, you need to find a man, a good man who's going to treat you well and, you know, not cheat on you and be successful and take care of you financially. So, you know, walking away from husband was like, well, like, am I going to be able to find that again? And so like knowing that there were like eligible bachelors out there that were like, that like hit the criteria and were like interested made me be like, okay, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So like,
right.
I moved into an apartment that was way too expensive for what my salary was, but I was like dipping into savings to pay for it. Cause I swear to God, Olivia, I was like, okay, so I can live here for a year on savings. And whether it's this guy that my friends like have called Prince Charming or like some Wall Street guy that I meet because I moved down to Wall Street. Like I have this joke that I moved to Wall Street to bag a billionaire, but like, I kind of not joking when I said that, but I was like, I can survive on my own for a year in this apartment. And then by then I'll probably find a guy and I'll move in with him and we'll get married and I'll be fine again.
Right.
So that was really my plan. And
very optimistic of you, you know, like really, like, you know, cause I feel like sometimes like people, when they go through something as traumatic as I assume a divorce is, it's like, you kind of just, you know, it takes you time to get your head back in a place of positivity, optimism, but like you just went out there with a fucking bang, girlfriend.
Yes. Or maybe we can call it just delusion. I was just completely delusional.
But here you go. You stumbled in again, I'm assuming. So, you know, it's not that delusional.
So I stumbled in the complete opposite direction. So basically, yeah. So I would say that like within 3 months of our separation, I like was in a relate, like I had identified that I had feelings for my friend Taylor. And then we were kind of like, I mean, I could, the joke is that like, what does a lesbian bring to the second date? A U-Haul? Because like girls like move so fast in relationships. But I will say that like once Tay and I started hooking up and like I identified that I had feelings for her and like it became like a thing, we were like hot and heavy like really quickly. But I was very like, this is secret. And like, we're not like, we might be a couple in the bedroom, but like, we're not a couple. Like, I don't want to meet your friends. You're not meeting my friends. You know, like it was very secretive because I was like, this is a phase. I'm just like experimenting. Like, I'm like, you know, I could be like having one night stands with like dirty dicks, like every single night post divorce or like in the middle of the separation. Or I could be hooking up with a girl secretly. You know what I mean? So like, to me, it was kind of, I really didn't think it was going to be like forever.
Right.
I kind of just thought it was a phase that I was going to let myself go through because, you know, I never like growing up or when I was dating, like I never like wanted anybody. I just always dated people that like liked me or wanted me. Does that make sense?
Kind of. I think it's more like maybe the chase, like you liked people chasing after you versus like chasing others.
Yes. But like, I never was like, oh my God, I want that guy. And then like really got him. But like when it came
I feel to, that.
But when it came to Tay, like, I was like, I want to hook up with her. And then I was like, I want to hook up with you. And she was like, no, because she was like, we're friends. You're in the middle of a separation. You're straight. And you also like sleep on my like couch with my roommate's apartment, like all the time. And also you keep a duffel bag of your like Chanel bags and Rolex watch and shit like that at my apartment for safekeeping until you get your own apartment. And like, basically I'm your number one best friend. And if we cross this line and I like get weird and lose interest in you, which I usually do, then like, who will you have to rely on as a friend?
Oh.
So I was like, okay, fine. Let's just keep it friends then. And then we ended up going on a trip, a work trip together that I had planned before I was even separated. So I had just like the purest of intentions, but I only booked one room because we were friends when I booked it.
Right.
And we were friends when we went on it. Like at that point I was like, okay, I said I wanted to make out or whatever. She is like not interested. That's fine. And then that was the trip that she was like, I actually really like you. And like, I always had a crush on you, but you were married. So like, I put that aside obviously, but like, you know, when you first came to me and said that you wanted to like hook up, I just was like thinking that you were doing that straight girl thing that straight girls do. And like, I don't want to be an experiment. I don't want to get used, but like, I really do feel like there is something here. And I think that we should kind of like explore it. But she was like, but if we're going to go down this path, we're in a relationship. We're not right. And I was like, yeah, we're in a relationship. But I mean, I'm like, but it's a secret run, right? And she was like, yeah. So that's how that started. But
how long until after was it not a secret anymore? Like, what was the turning point for you where I'm like, you became okay with it not being a secret?
Well, there were phases of secrecy. So like my mom, so like that happened like probably like early, like May-ish. That we started to hook up. And then I went home over the summer to visit my parents. And I remember my mom would say like shady shit to me, like, cause my mom knew that Tay was a lesbian, but at that point we had just been friends. And then when we started hooking up, she didn't necessarily know. And she was like, you keep hanging out with that lesbian friend of yours so much. Why do you hang out with some of your other friends? And I was like, oh shit, she knows. And then when I went home one time, she like asked me fucking point blank, are you in love with Taylor? And I was like, oh my God. And I'm like a 30 something year old woman. I'm going to lie to my mommy. So I was like, yeah, we're like in a relationship. And my mom flipped the fuck out. And like, literally it was like, we reverted back to like the high school version of me. And like, when we got home, I swear to God, she tried to ground me. And it was just like, it was a total shit. It was a shit.
That's actually so funny. What'd she take your phone away?
Yeah, no, I was like, so she asked me in the car. So we were fighting back and forth the whole way in the car. And then she was just like convinced that like I was confused post-divorce and Taylor like seduced me. That was like, she was like, that was her narrative and she wasn't going to change it. And I was like, mom, that is ridiculous. Like I'm older than Taylor Donahue. I'm, you know, I got a divorce. I'm doing what I want to do. And I was like, honestly, quite frankly, it's none of your fucking business. You're the one who asked me about my sex life. Like, don't ask somebody who, like, I'm getting a divorce. Like, I could be sucking D in an alleyway for fucking kicks and giggles. Like, you know, like, literally, it's not your business. So that was, like, the fight we were having back and forth. And then when we got home, I was like, I'm going for a walk. And she was like, no, you're not. You're going to your room.
Oh, my
and
God, I was stop.
Like, I'm like, I'm literally in my 30s. You didn't even guarantor my apartment. I'm my own fucking guarantor. Like, you literally have no right over me to tell me what to do or how to live my life. I fucking paid my own money to come here on the goddamn train, and I will call an Uber right now and go back to the train station and go back to New York City. You know what I mean? So yeah. It was kind of like that. And then like, my dad came home from work and my siblings were there and my mom and I were legit screaming at each other. I was like slamming. I was like, what's
you were name? Having a housewives moment. Like, it was very dramatic.
Girl, I was like Johnny Depp slamming cabinets. Remember that when that like video footage was released of him slamming cabinets?
Oh my God.
I was like slamming every fucking cabinet in my kitchen. It was a shit show.
That is insane.
My mom was
so
crying.
Funny though. Like in crying. Hindsight.
It's so funny. Now it's so funny because my mom fucking adores Taylor and couldn't be happier. And she's so, my mom is like so evolved. My mom actually like 2 years ago, or maybe even 3 years ago on my birthday, like wrote me a card basically being like, thank you so much for like being who you are, being brave, living your truth, because like you've helped me become a better person because of it.
So like, so sweet.
You're in such a good spot now. But I think it's important too for people, like if you are gay or you have come out or you're thinking of coming out, like there's like, I think people think parents are either like, no, you're going to be sent to gay camp and they're like horrible and they like make you pray the gay away. Or they're going to be like, oh my God, we always knew, congratulations. But the truth is it's really more about, it's
somewhere
more like
in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle. Yeah. Where like parents are like, yeah, my parents are very pro gay rights, gay marriage, gay everything. But like when it's their child and like off the bat, it was hard for them to adjust. So that was like, I came out to my family. And so then I started to like tell my friends, but even with my family, I just said to my mom, like, this is my private life, like sex life, and we're not talking about it. So don't bring it up. So even though I was like out and they knew it, it like, I wasn't, you know what I mean? So it took me an entire year to get the balls to come out on the air.
Wow.
On my radio show. So basically it was kind of a secret, and like, yeah, it was a secret for like an entire year.
Oh my goodness. That's crazy.
And then I came out on the radio, and then that was it. The cat was out of the bag. And then my parents were pissed off at me again that I came out on the radio. So that was fun. But then eventually, you know, I mean, five years later, like all is good in the hood, but
totally.
It was crazy.
Oh, I love it. I know. I love you and Taylor like so much together, individually as people, but also together. You just like, I love your journey, and I love this whole theme of you just kind of like stumbling into everything, but also it's like kind of a strategic stumble. Like you really always like set yourself up to like figure it out and be on the path, but then it's just like whatever curveball was thrown your way, you like rolled with the curves. I love that.
Thanks, girl. Well, you know, Tay and I love you so much. Your whole family, we're obsessed with you guys.
Obsessed with you back.
Yeah.
So fun. Anyways, Taylor Strucker, thank you so much for joining me on Maternity Live. What, like, so much great advice. I feel like, you know, it's amazing to me that you've been on radio for so long. Like, I don't want to age you by any means, because like in my mind, you're so youthful, but like you have like 100 years worth of experience and just like of life journey that I think are so many things that people like never experience in their lifetime. So thank you for sharing with my audience.
I just feel like at the end of the day, like, if you can just like figuring out who you are as a person is such like a gift, you know what I mean? And so once you figure out who you are and what you want, you just like be unapologetically you, you know what I mean? And as long Amen. As you're coming from a good place and you're being honest and truthful, like
no one can take that away from you if you're just being you.
No, they really can't.
The only person that would be disappointed in you is yourself. And honestly, there's nothing worse than like being disappointed in yourself.
It's the worst feeling in the world. And the only reason you'll be disappointed in yourself is if you're like lying and not being 100% like just who you are.
Exactly.
At your core. So just you do you, boo.
You do you.
Yes.
Exactly. Amazing. Love you so much, Taylor. Thank you.
Love you, girl.
And of course, if you want to listen to more of Taylor and I, you can go to her podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. It's called Taste of Taylor. This week's episode features me, so feel free to give that a listen. And you can follow her at Taylor Strucker on Instagram and keep up with The Taylor Strucker Show and Taste of Taylor. Maternity Livers, another week down. Thank you so much for joining me on the Maternity Live journey. As always, leave reviews, send me feedback, join our Maternity Livers Facebook group. I love hearing from you. And until next week, bye everybody.